The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home. Dum, 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 dum.
Only the Lonely, Episode 3, and just like Toy Story 3, spoiler alert, we've lost our Andy. Airdrie fans left feeling below pars as Talisman striker moves on to Dunfermline. Rohan Ferguson has departed too, but an innovative deal has seen him return from Motherwell on loan for the season with a couple of youngsters in tow. The season is well underway, and Part 1, we consider the results so far, taking us from Forfa to Kirkcaldy. And in Part 2, we'll look at the comings and goings at the Excelsior. Part 3, the managerial nearly go round. Finally, an appointment of a first team coach has been made, and we'll look at the steps that the club took to get there. The Aitchison incident, Nacho Novo, Kevin Thompson, James McFadden, John Rankin, and the many official statements from our dear leader. We'll also reflect on the job done by Gordon Dalziel and his role as director of football. Trust issues. After the trust meeting with the members, we'll consider the information disclosed and what that means for the club. And if there's time left, in Part 5 we might have another song for Airdrie and our new feature, Home and Away. This month we're coming to you from our new surroundings, deep within the bowels of the Excelsior Stadium. We are in the Ross Owen studio, and joining me today we have Danny Lambie.
Hello.
Hi Danny, and Alan Porteous.
Afternoon.
How have we been, guys? How's the gardening going, Danny?
It's exceptional. I'm building an ericaceous raised border with a pond.
Oh, a pot of very fancy.
Yep, yep. I'm going to keep lilies and tadpoles in it.
Excellent. And at this time of year, is this all right? Or are you kind of stepping it down?
Starting to die down now, but this is when you do your hard landscaping, your preparation for spring next year.
This is your pre-season, get the hard work
yep,
in.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, excellent. Alan, what's new with you? How you been?
No, I'm okay, not bad. I'm looking for a rare acacious performance by Airdrie this afternoon. Whatever that means, it sounds aggressive though, so...
Yep. Sounds good. I'm fulfilling a dream. I'm performing at the Excelsior Stadium at a home game, just not as maybe I dreamed when I was 10 years old.
We could get you a job as a mascot or something.
Yeah, in the Rocky suit.
One of those sad guys that's really old that runs out at the end and everybody says, oh, no. No.
Awkward encounter with the exes at Forfa as Boland, Cox, Lister, Mensing and Bain combined to down the Diamonds. We lost that opening game of the season 2-1. Alan, I believe you were up there.
Yes, I was at Forfa. It was an exciting start to the season, but I think everybody was just went up worried that Cox and Co were going to absolutely do us, and we were going to think, oh, we've got rid of the wrong guys, and Lister was going to rag us a wee bit. But to be honest, Jim looked an older man. Or maybe it was just our wonderfully stalwart defence marshalled them superbly. I don't know, was that. But they were marginally better than us, and which they haven't been marginally better than anybody else, I don't think, this season. So
yeah, they've got 3 points. Yeah, they have. They all came from us.
They have 3 points. Yes. So it was a disappointing start. Not the best. And there was the worst rain that you have probably ever seen at a football match. And I got water down the back of my neck, and as we were getting beaten 2-1, so there was nothing really to commend the deal at all.
Danny, were you up there at all?
No, I haven't been to an away game this season. I've only been to the home games.
Part-timers. Right, and then next game I've got down here, in tribute to Stuart Mathey and the official Twitter feed, Dickheads back to our broth with a point. So 1-1 tie here. I thought that was a really quite an entertaining game. Disappointing to go a goal down. But Andy Ryan signing off with quite a neat finish, and I thought we were unlucky not to take that game, and it gave me a bit of heart because it was the first time that I'd seen us. I thought the team played pretty well.
Yeah, I thought so as well. I had my suspicions that was the last time we would see Andy Ryan. Even when he scored the goal, I thought he was almost waving goodbye. But yeah, it was good, and I was a wee bit worried that Brian Prunty would come on and score a winner, but thankfully he didn't.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of. We seem to have a bad record with ex-players. I don't know if you just remember the ones who do it, but it's like Steve McCormick looked like a world beater any time he played against the Airdrie.
they all feel sort of fresh at having left.
Or they know how bad the defence is.
Well, yeah. Exactly. I don't remember their Arbroath game at all. And I was at it and I don't remember it. I vaguely remember the goal now that you brought it up.
I remember Andy Ryan's goal. The rest of it was kind of
so long ago.
Age is a terrible thing.
Dunhamer Dun Diamonds in the Ambrew Cup. So it was a 4-0 reverse. That fell between, well, Ryan leaving and between kind of anyone joining the squad. So they were down to the real bare bones. I don't think that shocked anyone. Was anyone at Palmerston?
No, I wasn't at that game, unfortunately.
No, I mean, I saw the squad on Twitter and I thought, my God, is this what we're going to be relying on? Nothing against the guys that were named on the squad, but I think, you know, that was the bare bones. That was the barrel being scraped that night. So,
Rover and out from Aitchison, a 2-1 win down at Clifton Hill, which looks like a good result, especially given the table, how well the Rovers are doing. And we probably went into that game not knowing what to make of the young loanees. So I think,
no, I mean, that was a great result, I think, and a good performance all told, because it was guys that had come in literally 48 hours prior to that. And you know, Clifton Hill is never easy. That pitch is a disgrace, and they played quite well. A couple of things that stood out for me was how small the Airdrie support was down there. It's the smallest support I've seen at Clifton Hill in minis a year. And obviously the Aitchison debacle afterwards, but I think we'll come on and talk about that. Later. Yeah.
How many Airdrie fans were watching over the wall?
I don't know. Probably more in the pub. I think that was the first time that I kind of noticed that fans were consciously avoiding going to what would traditionally be a day out, you know.
Wait till we get to Kirkcaldy.
There was maybe a bit of fear in that one as well, though, because there was nothing to suggest that with their form and our form we would.
No. And that's why, I mean, the result was excellent. Yep. You know, it really was. And I think that night we were sitting just off a playoff place. So.
And then that's the next game. So at home, Wasps stung as Airdrie swat Alloa away. So 2-0, brilliant result. Again, they've noted their troubles to seek. They've seemed to be struggling a bit this year, although they've picked up a little bit since. But on paper, again, yeah, a good result, and the league table looked really healthy, and you could feel quite positive after that game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Alloa performance was one of the best performances I've seen for
20 years.
It was certainly better than anything under since we went full time, certainly. Everything just seemed to gel, you know. And Willis Furtado, I think, was superb. And when I heard before I came in that we had got him in as a trialist, I was delighted, because I thought he was a standout with Stenhouse Muir last year. And it just all clicked. It was brilliant. It was a really enjoyable game.
Possession-wise, they looked good. I didn't feel that they created an awful lot for the time we had in the ball, I must be honest. I thought Tierney looked a little bit exposed up front in his own, and that's kind of slowly got worse over the weeks. But yeah, they, through the middle of the park, Watt looked like a real player. In fact, you know, I reckon that's the best first couple of games since Fraser, since Scott Fraser came along. He looked the real deal until Stranraer.
And that's what got a game too far, Stranraer. So a 3-1 reverse. Now, Alan, you braved traffic works, the long journey, whatever else, to get down there. So can you give us a high level of that game?
I'm putting myself forward as a nomination for fan of the season already. You know, it's about the scoring the
fan
early
of the season,
the early goal of the season that you think can never be beaten. Well, I'm thinking anybody that turned up at that game deserved something out. It was men against boys. You know, it was, if ever there was an indication that we are coming along with a whole bunch of young guys, loanees, whatever, full-time kids that just cannot compete with a whole team of, journeyman,
hardened, experienced
part-time players. That was it. We hardly got a kick of the ball, and there was hardly a shot to goal, and we just looked out our depths. We looked as if we're easily pushed off the ball, and nobody really wanted to know. Furtado played reasonably well. He took his goal very well with an unorthodox outside of the boot finish. But there was not much to say for that. No, it was a nice day. It was a lovely day. And
I didn't go down, but I heard that Conroy stuck a finger up at the fans criticising him, and I think Conroy's, for me, has been a disappointment this season. You know, when you look at the loanees and the really young guys that have come in and stuff.
As a senior guy, yeah,
you're looking for a leader on the park, and I would have loved it. You know, okay, Fitzpatrick would have become that leader if he hadn't injured himself again, but with him being out, you're relying on Conroy to stand in the middle of the park and kind of shepherd the lost lambs.
But let's not detract from how good Ailsa Craig looked in the sunset going up the road. That was that's my lasting memory of that game. Don't besmirch it.
Did you get a fish supper in where's the famous, is it Girvan?
Girvan? Mm-hmm. No. You always think of the Girvan Lighthouse, don't you, at that point, mm-hmm. don't you? Peter McCloy, the Girvan Lighthouse. No?
I don't know that story. What is that?
No, Peter McCloy, the ex-Rangers goalkeeper. He was his nickname was the Girvan Lighthouse.
Oh, was it?
Aye.
I never heard that.
Aye, absolutely.
On what basis? That he was big?
That he was from Girvan and he was the size of a lighthouse, I think, probably. Last seen, he eventually got a job working, sort of meeting and greeting people in the first tee at Turnberry, bizarrely.
Oh, God.
And I can remember playing a game of golf there in my more salubrious days. So, and I'm thinking, it's the Girvan Lighthouse.
So Peter McCloy works for Donald Trump now. He's part of that regime. It's a Masonic conspiracy regime.
he's the Alec McDonald of Turnberry, of Turnberry Golf Course. The Ailsa course, yes. Sorry, I took you off your
side there. No, it's every day's a school day. All I know is that lighthouse, I think when Greg Norman won the Open, he'd walked down there and sat and watched the sunset just with the view of the lighthouse, and talks about that as a defining moment of his career and his life.
Until Peter McCloy turned up and told him to be on his way.
I'm named after that, beat it, Great White Shark. So the next game we've got down, East Fife Strife, a 1-0 defeat, after a bright start, I think that's the point where you really think, those two games, if we'd taken something, you're looking up the way you're looking at playoffs, whereas it moved us down towards the other playoff battle, which might be the focus of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the East Fife game was flat. That's the only way I can describe it. We never looked like doing very much, and East Fife were poor, and a better team would have put us to the sword.
We looked like a rudderless ship, really, didn't we? There was no leader in the park. It was clearly a team without a manager that was going to motivate mm-hmm. them in any way.
Yeah.
When you're in that thing, the substitutions that are getting made, and I've noticed that for the last 2 or 3 weeks, it was like for like. There was no plan B. You know, you're just feeling, if ever there's a team needing something, you know, coming from the bench or at least, a leader in the park, a good captain that's going to, you know, gee them up and, you know, turn the tables in the team a wee bit and their opposition a wee bit. That's mm-hmm. needed, but no.
Not to be. And then another bad result against Fifers, a 2-0 reverse up at Starks Park. Not really a surprise, and not that bad a result.
You say it's a bad result. I was actually fearing the worst for that. You know, I thought if it could be 4 or 5 quite easily. I mean, Raith Rovers have started well. We've, you know, despite a couple of good results, we've started to hit a bad patch of form, and I was worried that Raith Rovers would really humiliate us. So I didn't go, and from what I hear, very few people went. But
72
apparently, the magic number.
In the words of Turin Breaks, 72.
Another reference I don't get. It's a tough crowd for you.
This is a Rangers reference again, is that not when they won the Cup?
No, it's
Cup?
Not. It's not at all. It's a popular music reference.
But the what was I saying? He's put me off there. Apparently, it was
72. 72.
On your sorry, song for every part 5, but we can bring it on.
Remember the kids' show number 73? Do you remember that?
No, I don't know that.
Who was the wifey with no neck?
Sandy
Toksvig, that was it.
The wifey with no neck?
No neck. Sandy Toksvig.
She does all that.
She does all the Radio 4 stuff now.
Call my bluff.
Aye. I completely lost. Oh, yeah, Rowan. apparently it was just, you know, Rowan fault for both the goals, and we might have got something. We had a few chances in the first half, and I was watching the statistics on the BBC, and it was, you know, possession wise and shots wise we were on a par with them.
Yeah.
But then a couple of bad mistakes cost us.
They did okay, but I think it's the type of performance that they were trying to put in. It's always easier to play that way. They went out with six defenders on the park and were shutting men down, and they did that very well. You know, there was a bit of passion there that was lacking.
Yeah.
You know, in other games, but you just felt that the shots that we were having, it was up to Furtado. You had to drop it over their back four, and they had to run into it, and he wasn't getting a lot of time. There were shots from the edge of the box and a few sclaffs and what happened. Mm-hmm. But as our new manager had said, you know, it was 80 minutes or so of the game plan going reasonably well, but this is the problem. You know, the goalkeeper's prone to tossing the ball in the net, and for once he actually came out for a ball, and everybody criticised him for not coming out. He comes out for it, spills it, and even then, though, you know, the ball broke to the penalty spot, and the guys get plenty of time to wheel on it and do a kind of an awkward looking basically kick type of thing, and a defender should have been on it as well, and that suddenly you're under a wee bit of pressure at that point.
A bit of tiredness, a bit of lack of concentration, which
from our full time players, yeah, a bit of tiredness.
But then, I mean, see if you look at the Alloa game in Balotelli, and I was reminded when I saw him just how fragile our defence.
Is that his name? Balotelli?
Balotelli, that's what I call him.
Tony Balotelli.
No, I call him Balotelli.
No, you're wrong.
Is that not a kind of pizza sauce or something you get out of Aldi's?
He's a wee shite for not signing up, that's why.
No, I don't think he's doing that way at Falkirk. I think he maybe found his level in League One.
I mean, the performance he put in the Alloa game, I didn't go to the Alwyn Rovers game, but the Alloa game, I thought, you know, he stood out as the kind of central defender that we've been crying out
for. He was a class
for.
Act, and he was nurturing people through the game as well, wasn't he? You know, our dafties at either side of him were being marshalled quite well. And,
if we could have kept him, I think our season might look a lot more promising.
Yeah, no, an important position in the team. You need a sensible head to organise the central defence.
I would maybe make a cheeky bid for him next week, because he's bound to be, as Falkirk gets slashed again today. You know,
some strange rule though that you can only play for so many clubs in a season. So I think once he's done, I don't think you can move too many times. He might already be they might be stuck with him.
Is that right?
You can't even come back as a loan.
No, I'm not sure. I just know that there's as part of the like transfer window and everything, I think there's only, you can play for two teams a year and that's it. But he was only a trialist with us. Don't know. I suspect he'll not be running back. He'll probably run a decent wage at Falkirk.
Yeah.
Right, so we've done part, and then today it's massive game. So we're just about an hour and a bit from kickoff against Queen's Park. Part time amateurs taking on the full time professionals. So the
full time amateurs.
Oh, there can be only one. One winner here, get your house on it. We've not had a great record. Well, it was a mixed record against Queen's Park last year.
I mean, this performance
Challenge Cup game at the start of the year.
The beginning of the season was phenomenal.
Or League Cup game, sorry.
And then, we beat them a couple of times at Hampden, didn't we?
We lost 3-0 around the time when it was all going wrong. I remember going along to that, and that was a miserable experience. But then I think it was maybe two wins apiece or something last year with them.
Yeah, I mean, I think today's really important. We're going to need to pick up as many points at home, and our home record over the last 4 or 5 years hasn't been great.
Yep.
But it would be nice. And you know, we've spoken before about the reasons for the home record, and the club seems to put a lot of the blame at the fans and the hostility that the young guys feel. So I don't think there'll be a big crowd here today. I think it's up to the guys to motivate themselves on the pitch. And what I have found from the fans is when we have put in a performance like against Alloa, the fans have really appreciated it and have been quite tolerant and almost expecting the bad performances and haven't been overly critical.
It's football fans the world over that they get frustrated and they boo or whatever. I don't think Airdrie a happy clappy small, but I don't think we're the worst either. And it's not the most. I think more to do with the stadium is it's a quite a big pitch. It's not that atmospheric, so you probably don't have much of a home advantage. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the fans are causing the players not to sleep at night and bad results.
No. The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home.
So we've already spoken about Balotone, only with us for a short time, but looked like he would have been a real asset for a couple of wins, and sad to lose him. He's gone to Falkirk. I don't think anyone would begrudge him taking that chance. No. He's probably getting more money for himself, and yeah, as Alan's already said, like he'll be having much of a good time at the moment, but not much that we can do about it. They haven't replaced him. We could do with an old head at the back if there was someone available.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen now that Finlay's been formally announced as the coach. I don't know if there's going to be any additions or whether that's, you know, we're going to play with who we've got. I was pleased that McGregor came back. I was actually quite disappointed about the way that Joe Gorman left and seemed to have been kind of...
So was I. It was a year too late.
Yeah. He was ostracised for whatever reason, and, you know, there was games... if you look at the game against Queen of the South, for example, where somebody like Joe Gorman surely could have done a turn for us.
Oh, I disagree. I thought he was a total bomb scare almost every time he went on the park.
He didn't show anything in any games that I saw. He came in with a bit of a pedigree to being a youngster at Inverness, but I don't think he's been a big loss just because his performances weren't great. Mm. Whether or not a good coach would get more out of him, I don't know. But it's, yeah, who you replace him with? Yeah. I mean, if it's him or Dean Cairns, he's got more experience. If it's him or Brownlee, he's got more experience. So,
well, to be honest, I think Dean Cairns started the season really well.
Yeah, I agree.
And he was really unfortunate to lose his place because Balotone came in.
Yeah.
And Brownlee was favoured. Now, I don't think, you know, Brownlee's struggled a little bit in the last few weeks as well. And I was delighted to see Cairns' name in the team sheet last week. But the poor guy could play in midfield and chasing around, and I would have rather McIntosh or somebody like that was put in that position to make a nuisance of himself, because I think Cairns has looked quite able in the centre half position, and for some reason or other he seems to be viewed as third choice at the moment, and I kind of don't get it. That's
what is it? What, 18, 19, something like that? He's a real youngster. Mm. I think if all being well, you would like to see him developing the under-20s or whatever it is the second team, but we just don't have that luxury, and if he is the best player in the position, yeah, he should be playing.
he hasn't looked, you know, ill at ease or uncomfortable or lacking in confidence in any way. He's been quite a wholehearted type of a guy, so I would be giving him a chance, and there's no two ways about it.
Other departures: Andy Ryan, massive loss, but £20,000, if that's what was reported. It's not an insignificant sum in terms of the club's budget.
Yeah, it's the fanzine, which will be out against Albion Rovers. Everybody should buy a copy. Jim Milton wrote a great article about the last season that Airdrie had two strikers with more than 20 goals was when it was Jarvie. And I think Jarvie left for 50,000. And that was 1972 or something like that. So we got perhaps half that fee for Andy Ryan, you know?
Yeah, but that was Airdrie probably in the old first division, whereas this is Airdrie in the second division.
But I mean, it, when you look at what was going on down south, and even, you know, transfers that were going on around us, the £20,000 is such a kind of desperate fire sale amount, you know.
I know, and
listen, it makes financial sense for the club, don't get me wrong, and by all accounts Ryan was on a good wage. I've heard £1,300 a week. You know, that's just speculation, so I don't know if it's true, but if it is true, it makes a lot of sense for us to offload that wage and bring in any sum of money.
To be honest, the way he was playing in terms of, he was anchored up front in his own, and the way the team were playing, you could have permed one from five or six guys there that would have done probably not an awful lot more. Mm. So, you know, any money is probably better than nothing. What I thought was we were maybe a little bit unlucky, because I know Motherwell had put in a bid for him at the start of the season, and you have the feeling that if the guy Lewis Moult had gone for a decent amount of money, then Motherwell might have been prepared to splash a wee bit more for that, for a direct replacement.
Yep.
And he's still hanging around, and that's never been dealt with. So, you know, and then I think you get the feeling that every game that Andy played, his kudos, if you like, was his price was going down a little bit, because he just looked uncomfortable and frustrated and not really getting a lot of service. So, you know, maybe it was the time for him to go. And I said,
oh, definitely, definitely. I just like, as we would all would, I liked a wee bit more. And I think I feel sorry for Andy Ryan, actually, because you know, had Airdrie been promoted last season, I think Andy, if he had got another strike partner, could have had another strong season with Airdrie in the Championship, and he could then have got a Motherwell or even an Aberdeen or a Hearts or a Hibs. But he's now sitting on the subs bench at Dunfermline, and I worry that his career might stall again. It's because I think he's a promising player.
If he's good enough to go to Hearts, then he should be good enough to tear it up at Dunfermline. So this is there's a few things about it. I mean, if he was on £1,300 a week, they'd have been as well letting him go at the start of the summer rather than pay his wages all the way through, because if you get £20,000, it barely covers that. So that's slightly they'd have been better selling him sooner for less money. Who was the last striker that we had that made an impact like him? Probably Alan Russell, and that was in the age when we were on 1 year, everybody was on a contract to take you to the last game of the season to try and help with budgets. So the fact that they've managed to sell someone for money is one positive in the Tom Witherspoon model of signing these guys up. One negative of many is Joe Gorman, because they signed him up. They must have, we've spoken about spending money putting fires out before. That's exactly what I imagine happened there to persuade him to go. He either wanted the money in his hand. So Andy Ryan had undoubtedly a success story. Sad that he's moved on. Wish him all the best. We'll see what happens to him. And you need to try and find the next one.
Where's Alan Russell now?
He went to Killy, and I don't know what he did after
that. I'm sure he's a coach now. I read something about his coaching.
He appeared in River City.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he was a part-time model, and they did some storyline where he was taking someone for a date in the ship in. So
how do you even know that?
I don't know. How do you know that song about 72 and about the lighthouse guy?
McCloy being having a willy like a lighthouse. Or
I never said that. You've taken that too far.
Other departures, we'll maybe just quickly touching these before we move on. Ferguson, but he's back. I thought that was quite a clever deal.
No, it was. Yeah, very much. And I think that we've got to give credit to Motherwell for that, funnily enough. I mean, you know, we're the winners out of that. Whatever the deal is with his wages, I'm not sure, but the fact that we've got his services for another year saves us bringing somebody new in. And it's good for Ferguson as well. I don't know if he'll... I wouldn't imagine Ferguson would go into the first team at Motherwell next year unless there's significant personnel changes, but it's a good move. Yeah. Good move.
And the two loanees with him. So yeah, I think Liam Brindle had put up, he reckoned you could put a figure of about 40,000 on that, which if you only get 20,000 for Andy Ryan, it's a clever bit of business. So fair play to the club on that. And then other ones, Balotelli we've already spoken about. Loudon, obviously just making the decision that it wasn't for him, which is a shame, because I think he showed in a couple of games last year, excited the fans, and we just never got the chance to see fully what he was made of.
He left football, didn't he?
He was another one though that had showed a little bit of promise. I remember coming on as a sub at Livingston, and you thought, here's the guy that's put himself about a wee bit, looks a bit likely,
and
immediately was loaned out to somebody or other. So back to the Dean Cairns type of thing, you know, if you show a wee bit of promise, that's the one route out of the first team at Airdrie, isn't it, really?
And then ins, we've got Luke Watt, Tom Fry, Willis Furtado, Jake Hasty, Jordan McGregor and Ryan Tierney. So I mean, just unless you were following youth football about Scotland, most of those you wouldn't have seen. Decent, they look like prospects.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
far.
I said earlier about Furtado, and the frustrating thing about Furtado is against Alloa, he played a kind of winger role, and you know he was feeding the front line, and I don't think he seems to have been kind of put more as a centre forward now.
He played centre forward last week.
And I don't know if that's fair his best. He seems like a creator rather than a finisher. And I remember him playing against playing with Stenhousemuir when they thumped us 5-0 last year, and he ran up and down that wing, and everything he touched was brilliant. Mm. And I thought when I saw him against Alloa, that was the kind of role he was going to play for us as well. And the fact that Adam Brown seems to have disappeared, and that was kind of Adam Brown's role, and I thought that's where Furtado was actually going to sit. So it'll be interesting to see where he's sitting today, what position he's playing in today, because I think he's stronger as a creator.
If he plays up front, he can't play up front in his own. But this is my theory of football in general. You need to have two men up the park. Tierney was struggling to make the ball stick, and I think Furtado did a little bit last week as well. And if there was at least two of them, it would make things a little bit easier.
Yeah, so it's probably as much to do with the formation as it is for the capability of the individuals. You know, if you're playing one up front, you need to be a particular type of player.
I didn't know his name was Willis.
No.
Somebody eventually shouted last week, "Come on, Willis." I had no idea. I was calling him Nelly.
I always just called him Nelly, yeah.
Just for the shoot. Just, I'm going to continue to call him Nelly. He'll always be Nelly to me.
Well, he's a wee bit Nelly the elephant. He needs to lose a wee bit of weight, doesn't he?
Well, absolutely.
Says me.
Well, he's had a full time training for how long now? Is that like about a month now? So surely there should be signs of him.
He'll be wasting away.
Putting a stone on here or there. No doubt.
It's one of the joys of football at this level, though, you can carry a wee bit about with you and still be the best player on the pitch.
Does anybody know what our full time training session hours are at the moment?
Apparently, they'll only do 2 hours. The training's only 2 hours.
Last year, I remember reading that they timed the training session so it was like close to 3 o'clock, and now their body clocks were used to hitting their peak performance at that time, and they trained one day a week here because make sure that they were familiar in surrounds at just a level of sports science which that had no place in the kind of performances that we were putting out.
So I heard they were only training Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays full time at the moment, and Tuesdays and Thursdays were evening, like part time. But don't quote me on it.
No.
There will be. You need to allow for recovery as well, and I'm sure when you read about in Davy Farrell's book, it's really interesting about Alex McDonald's training regime. He compares Alex McDonald to Alex Miller, and Alex Miller was all about like shape and doing stuff without the ball. Alex McDonald, from memory, it was Monday was a day off because Doddy was in the social club that he drank in on a Sunday night, so you got a freebie.
In the Monday club.
Tuesday was a horrible session where he did fartlek running with Kenny Black, who was apparently the fitness fanatic, running everyone really hard, and that was where they basically did their fitness week work. And the rest of the week was basically like five-a-sides and small games. So I think different managers do it differently, but I don't think you can hammer it every day because it'll end up your body doesn't recover. But I'm not sure what you're trying to do.
Donald Jenner, it's probably have changed now, but I spoke to Donald Jenner at the beginning of last season. He says that Monday was a recovery day, so they would look at...
They were all depressed.
Well, they would look at the
clinical psychologist then.
Look at the video and then go for their one-to-one sessions and they talk about, you know, the game. And then Tuesday was the heavy day.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday was preparing. In fact, I think Wednesday they got off, so it was Thursday, Friday was preparing for the next game.
Bookies. Must have gone to bookies at some point as well. That's a standard. No, you don't need to go to the bookies now.
No,
you're
not allowed to go to the bookies now.
You've got your phone app now, so you don't need.
You get your Joey Barton, that's you, no more football. Right. I think that's... We've touched on all the rivals, so we can further assess them today, hopefully. We'll turn in a Nelly Furtado hat-trick, packs his trunk with goals, and on we go up the league.
The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home.
Part 3, so I've called it the managerial nearly go round because we had so many people waiting to come on. We had Barry Ferguson, we spoke about last time. Since then, we had umpteen stories linking mainly former Rangers players with the post. So Nacho Noble, Kevin Thompson, John Rankin, James McFadden got mentioned, but those didn't seem to be big stories, but the suggestion seemed to be they'd been tapped up about the job as well. And then yesterday, as Davy Finlay's been given the post of first team coach, and also in the interim and probably the most interesting thing. So there was the Willie Aitchison incident and his sudden departure. So in shortly following a 2-1 win away at Clifton Hill, the announcement made that he was on the way out, and then we had this start of what's become a theme of Airdrie, a trade-off between the club's official position being put out through the website, that being debated by the other side of whoever's involved, which in that case was Will Aitchison, but we've also had more Mark Perry and Jim Ballantyne going at it.
There seems to be only one common denominator in all this.
No, oh, Jim Ballantyne's been involved in each of these.
I'll say no more.
Aitchison, so he was barely with us, got a win at Clifton Hill, got the draw against Arbroath. Was he in for the draw against Arbroath? I think he was.
Mm-hmm. He was at the Queen of the South game.
And well, circumstances. Danny, do you want to leave off? So, circumstances surrounding his departure. So,
yeah, I mean, I think he done something that upset Jim Ballantyne, and you know, the story is that he was bringing in coaches that Ballantyne was uncomfortable with, that didn't have the qualifications or he didn't have the permission to have them in the dugout, and there was technical reasons why Ballantyne got upset, and he apparently ignored those instructions, and Ballantyne didn't take kindly to it, and the rights and the wrongs of that, Aitchison had his side, Ballantyne has his side. The big thing for me is the way that it's handled in the press, and I said this last time that you know, the way that the club communicates with the fans and with different stakeholders is key and imperative, and we're still not getting it right. And it could have been handled in a different way. And even the statement on the club website where, you know, it says it was just curt and it just lacked a finesse and a diplomacy that would have meant that that situation wasn't escalated the way that it was escalated. And what you got to remember is you're trying to sell this club, and we spoke about this last time, you're trying to sell this club as an opportunity for a young manager or a manager to come and get a few months experience and, you know, build up something. And if you're looking at that and considering it, and then you see the way that Aitchison was dealt with and that situation was dealt with, you'd think, well, that's made up my mind for me, you know, despite the fact that I was interested, even though I wasn't going to get paid, that I didn't have a player's budget, you know, that the fans would have been hostile against me from day one. If that's the way that they perceive the club's going to treat you, you're going to think, I'm not touching that. You know?
And it's probably indicative that nobody's been pushing themselves forward since. You know, it's crystal clear that it's a poison chalice, I think, the Airdrie job at the moment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so the other names that I've run through there, John's a local boy and has had a good career, but probably not as high profile as the others. So why would Nacho Novo, Kevin Thompson or James McFadden want to take the job unless they were getting told you're going to have a budget to do something, which I assume isn't the case?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would imagine quite a fair bit of that was paper talk, but I've been led to believe that with the Thompson thing anyway, that he was approached, and whether he was formally offered the job or not, I don't know, but he decided that he was better off concentrating on his academy, and to be perfectly honest, I think he made the right decision.
So who offered him the job then? Because Jim Ballantyne didn't.
Well, the gossip is that he was approached to see if he'd be interested, and you know, the nuance of not, you know, are you interested in coming to work for Airdrie or work with Airdrie, and that's different to saying I'm offering you the job as manager. And
I wondered if it was some if DL was dealing with a lot of stuff as well, and there was just a division in terms of who was responsible for what, and where Jim's in the press saying that the guy definitely wasn't offered the job and definitely wasn't approached. He definitely wasn't approached by Jim Ballantyne, but that doesn't mean he wasn't approached by somebody else. I mean, in which case, you're just getting mixed messages. And
that's the other part of the Aitchison story is apparently it was DL that brokered that whole situation. Mm. And I don't know. I mean, DL would have been on the radio when Aitchison was told that it was no longer required. So I can only assume that he was not consulted. So what does that do to the relationship between DL and Ballantyne? And I know you want to speak about DL in a wee bit, but that is a peculiar relationship as
There's certainly been no comment from Gordon DL about, no, about any of these things. And as a director of football, if we want to call him that, then it's the sort of thing that you would expect him to be commenting upon.
I mean, after the last I heard from DL was calling for calm, wasn't it? And that was months ago, a good few months ago. He's been particularly silent.
Well, let's touch on a couple of different things here then. So Gordon DL has said that he'd do an interview for us, and unfortunately we haven't been able to set that up yet, but it'd be good to get his take on it, because I think he's not said much to the press so far, and he'll have his own version of events, and if he's prepared to share that, that would be quite interesting. But you're correct, the Aitchison story and these other stories, to me there's a bigger question of how's this club being run. So we know that the major shareholder is M&H Logistics, and that's the kind of Tom Wotherspoon camp. Tom Wotherspoon is, we're led to believe, close personal friends with Gordon DL, so you would think there might be communication between them. And so if he's setting up Will Aitchison to come in and take the club, that suggests that relationship's kind of being managed there. However, that relationship seemed to have fallen out with the other camp, Jim Ballantyne seemed to be having the fallout with them about, you're bringing in these coaches, they're not properly licensed, or they brought the game, whether they paid into the game or whatever. Mm-hmm. That seemed to be a dispute with another party. And is this all joined up at the moment? So I don't know, but is Jim Ballantyne talking to Tom Wotherspoon, is our chairman and director, whose job it is to run the thing, is he doing things without being joined up with the person that owns all the shares?
Do you think Aitchison doing what he did constituted a sackable offence anyway? It's quite a strong thing.
Oh, it is. I mean, I can only assume that there was other things going on, and perhaps it comes back to exactly what you're saying there. It's to do as much with the relationship between Ballantyne and DL / Wotherspoon as anything else. So if Ballantyne felt that Aitchison was foisted upon him by other people and he had no say in it, and you know, he maybe was against it from day one, and he was looking for a reason, looking for an excuse to take the action that he did take, but it did seem extreme.
Yeah, and especially if it's a job where we're led to believe he was on expenses. So why would you, getting sacked from a job that you're not even getting paid for?
That's not one for the CV, is it?
No.
Sacked as a volunteer.
after a victory in a derby that nobody thought we were going to win.
He's a way to work for the British Heart Foundation or something, but he fears for his job.
We've got a new man in tow. I must confess, I don't know much about our new first team coach. I know that he was here before and he seemed to be quite highly thought of, so we wish him the best of luck. Spoke well in his interview on Diamonds TV last week, so hopefully he's got pedigree in working with young players. I think he's brought players through here before. Best of luck to him. I don't know if you have any thoughts on the appointment.
I'm just glad it's happened, you know, and it should have happened a few weeks ago, because by all accounts it was almost inevitable, unless there were a number of other people who were approached and decided not to take it. You know, would have been as well given Finlay the post officially some time ago. I would have liked, of all the people that were mentioned, I would have liked McFadden. McFadden as a player manager would have been a kind of marquee thing that might have just given us a wee boost. And you know, I was actually disappointed. When I heard about Nacho Novo, I thought, oh my god, Stephen Thompson, fair enough, but McFadden, I was disappointed when that came out and then didn't come to much, because that could have been something that could have excited people.
Yeah.
am I the only one whose heart sank when I heard this appointment? Because it just
Finlay,
it just smacks of another manager that's not got any experience.
Agreed.
I dare say he's done very well with the youth. But, Jim Ballantyne was on saying that we were hang fire for the exciting appointment, and there we go again.
Yeah.
You know, I just.
I
suppose a point to be made with that as well is that when we were casting around looking for a managerial appointment to do that kind of caretaker role that Fitzpatrick took on, then Finlay wasn't managerial calibre enough to take that on then. So even to take on that role, he wasn't the right man for that. So why is he suddenly okay now? I hope I'm wrong, and I'm not going to, you know, decry a guy before he's had a crack at it, but it's an incredibly uninspiring appointment at a time when just somebody with a wee bit of experience, I get might have brought. We need some bums and seats as well, and I just think the whole Airdrie fan base are all going, oh God, here we go again. Something. We'll see this afternoon. I always feel that, you know, with a new manager, you're looking for a reaction from the players. You know, if you see a wee bit of something on the park, there's something being ignited early doors, then fair enough. If we slump to some kind of a game like the East Fife game, then I think there'll be worries.
Well, the concern is that he isn't really a new manager. You know, he's been around for a good number of weeks now, and a lot of the performances and the preparation for the games, he would have had a say in those.
So good.
I can't see there being a fundamental change in the setup today. I don't know. There might be. The thing I would have liked is somebody with a contact book. So either a wizened old head or somebody that had access to loans and resources that they could have freshened things up here and there.
Agreed, but that was never on the cards. I mean, look at all the names that have been touted. So Ferguson, Novo, Thompson, John Rankin, James McFadden, none of them have got experience. So there's a risk if you go for a new manager. Pep Guardiola didn't have a job before he took on Barcelona. Ian Murray didn't have a job before he took on Dumbarton and were outstanding successes.
No, somebody's got to start somewhere, yeah. Obviously. Yeah.
But so
I just don't think we're in the position to be to act as a guinea pig club anymore. We've had time after time after time have people not been up to the mark. And
but if we're not paying a salary, then you're not going to get someone that's going to come in that's got a pedigree. So I was resigned to it's going to be a first timer, and it's dragged on for so long. Teams have sacked managers before we've even got one, like Gary Boland's away. So at least there's someone there now. And fingers crossed.
No, I agree. I mean, best of luck to him, and I'll be the first to shake his hand if I get the opportunity. If he can keep us in the league, which is basically the objective of this season. But I think I'll come back to the point that it's about communication and managing the expectations of the fans. And there's been statements that have come out on both sides that have you know, the press side and the club side, that have misled and frustrated the fans. And you know, the fact of wait for a big exciting announcement. Now, there's been a couple of times where, you know, there's going to be big announcements about further advances and stuff, and then there's silence, and that silence is doing a lot of damage. You know,
this week there will be an announcement this week, so then when there isn't then you think, well, something must have fallen through. And then if there's a press story, we can't tell if Mark Perry's made it up or not. But well, what were you going to announce? You must have thought you had someone close. So that gives a bit of credence to what he's saying. So
The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home.
Issues of trust. So, Danny, you presented very well at the trust meeting the other week. And I watched that on Facebook Live, so I had a good view of the back of Bob Reid's head for about 2 hours or something. But that was really good, because I couldn't make the meeting, but I could still catch up with it later on. The main points I took away from it are, it's now kind of been confirmed what's happening in the background. So Tom Witherspoon is keen to exit. He's looking to sell his shares. He has a gentleman called Colin McGowan who's involved at Hamilton Accies trying to broker a deal for him. And the initial asking price was £350,000, which was then dropped to £290,000. And there had been some discussions between the trust and Tom Witherspoon's representative around that.
And it's now been dropped to £10.
And decreasing.
And a turkey share cut.
Can of cola.
Then there was discussion that needed around that, and Danny, your presentation was kind of to bring everyone up to speed. I don't think there's any point rehashing that. They can still watch that on the Trust Facebook page if they would like. The apprentice scheme, which Tom Witherspoon essentially set up, the club was then bound to support, and the Trust agreed to give that financial backing. And it was agreed, okay, there'll be a contract put in place around that, so that if any of those players turns out to be the next Tony Watt, the Trust would get a return of monies on their initial investment. So whether that happened, if that happened, then there's an upside. But I don't think that's why they were doing it. There was just a comment then that we're still been expected to put this money in, but nothing's ever been formalised. So that was considered, there was a vote and it was said, okay, we should continue to support that, because if you don't, then there's a suggestion that the apprentices are left without a job, and that's not anything I think the trust would want to be involved in. But still, what was agreed should be documented, and no one seems to be disputing what was agreed, so let's get that down in writing to give the trust a bit of comfort that they're still working with the club.
It's worth updating you that has now been put in place.
Okay,
so
good.
Since the meeting, we've had further discussions with the club, and there is a contract. It's not been signed yet, but it's been agreed between the trust and the club.
So it's not a contract yet?
There is a document that's still to be signed.
Unsigned document.
Yes, but I mean, I think that was the best we could have expected from that situation, and it's all we ever wanted. You know, 18 months into an agreement.
How long does it take to sign a document?
Well, it was the production of the document that was taking the time.
Have we signed it?
We're waiting on a physical copy of it.
The fans' representative on the board, so another one, Danny, you'll know the history to this, seems to have been muted forever. So that was just discussed. And is it something that we should do, or we, the trust, should do? That was, again, agreed. Yes, they should continue with that, subject to there being kind of clear terms of reference as to what does that mean. So what's he going to be involved in? He or she going to be involved in what he or she will input into that, what responsibilities they'll have, and they'd want to understand their own liability here. So my own thoughts watching that was, if you're a director, there's certain duties. If you're a director of a company that goes into administration or becomes insolvent, there's other implications. So getting it in a format that the person doing it and the trust is comfortable with. So has there been any update on that?
No, I mean, we have to have some detailed discussions with the club about that. That's going to be very, very complicated because of all the reasons that you said, you know. And I think there was a feeling in the room that night, and there's been a feeling in the trust all along, that without that document, that position is something that is unattractive for anybody to take up, let alone anything else. And all you would be is a token sitting around a table, and you would have access to the information that it was deemed appropriate to give you access to. You wouldn't necessarily have a productive and functioning role in the running and the governance of the club. So without that documentation, I don't think that's something that any fan would be keen to take up. But we have had a couple of interested people that have said that they would like to do the role if that structure was in place. So yeah, we'll keep pushing it. I think it's the right thing to do. It should have been done a long time ago. And if it happens this season, fair enough. But it's still something I think the Trust will push for in the medium to long term.
And in every episode of this, we've spoken about communication one form or the other. Regardless of what that role looks like, if it is the thing that forces proper governance, whether that's a monthly meeting or whatever, for these issues to be discussed with feedback to the fans about what's actually happening, that would be a positive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, though, that becomes, you've touched on it, it becomes a very, very difficult role for somebody to take on, to the extent that I would argue that certainly in the current circumstances, I don't feel that the time is right for a representative to go on that board, because they'll not get any information, and then the pressure is upon them to be confidential about what they're trying to do as well. If they are going to have a reasonable role to play within the board, then, you know, how many things occur at board level that you just don't simply want siphoning its way through to the fans?
Oh yeah.
And that puts the fans rep under pressure as well, you know. And if they're going to be signing a confidentiality agreement of some sort, then what is the point of the position in the first place?
Turn that on its head. What actually needs to stay confidential? So I think that's part of what you would need to scope out. So certain financials, yes, but there should be financial transparency. This is the thing that's missing. Came up at the meeting that the people who put their money in as shareholders, what's that now, maybe about 4 years ago or something. Yeah, they haven't had a detailed set of accounts for 3 years or
no
whatever.
No shareholder meeting. No.
So that to me, that doesn't need to be confidential. Maybe approach these to players, but with the way that this market works, I don't think it's really clubs outbidding each other or anything. So I don't think that there should be things being discussed at board level that can't come back to the fans. That's my big bugbear with it. Why can't we see what the financial performance is against budget? Why can't we see we've made a profit this year and it's been used to repay directors' loans, if that's what's going to happen this year? Part of the terms of reference, I agree this is where it maybe fall down because the club won't be comfortable in doing it, but there's going to be someone, you're going to have regular meetings, there's going to be someone there from the trust. The trust put in £30,000 last year, don't know,
£50,000
last year. So in return for that, then you're going to be open with the fans about how money is used, where money is short, what training at Ravens Creek looks like, and it's the kind of that would burst open all this confidentiality, because to me there's no place for it in a club of this size.
I mean, it's a cultural issue as much as a legal issue, and it's just not the way that the club seems to be comfortable operating at the minute. But we'll keep fighting that fight. We'll keep debating that debate and see what comes of it. But I thought it was quite a good meeting. There was quite a lot of input from the floor. There was a good turnout.
There was more people there than were at Kirkcaldy. Officially.
It just took a wee bit of effort to update people on where we were and what we had been doing behind the scenes. And it's funny because exactly what Alan was saying here, the trust has taken quite a bit of flack after it and before it about being perceived to have been withholding information. And that there is a naivety and a maturity that's required, that if the trust or if a fans rep is going to be dealing at a strategic level with the running and development of the club, some things are sensitive and it won't be a case of just coming out of a meeting and posting everything on Facebook. We need to conduct ourselves in a professional and appropriate manner, and fans need to, you know, the fans need to accept that the trust or people that are representing the fans aren't withholding information so that they can be in the know. Sometimes, you know, I get this allegation of a little clique, and that's just not the case. It's highly uncomfortable dealing with some of these issues and dealing with some of these people, and I don't think that anybody that's involved in the trust feels privileged about having access to some of the things that we've had access to.
And the final point that was discussed was just a trust restructure, whether it should move to a charitable institution, might open up a route to getting public funding, which would help with some of the projects. However, you also then need to, you might need a full-time employee, and if you're a charity, you have to actually show that you're backing charitable causes. So just doing a Frank Bruno night, making money, passing that to the club would become more difficult. So to me, it seemed as if that was part for, there's so many things going on just now, and maybe that gets reconsidered at a later date.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still, okay. I think there's still merit in that, and I took both sides of the argument from that meeting, and I can see both sides, and I think we would need to have the two running in tandem. So the financial support that goes into the club couldn't go through a charitable trust, because it just is inappropriate to be basically subsidising a football club through charitable activities. But there are community activities which I think we would all like the trust to build on, the community football side of things, that we don't have access to funding, and that funding is available. So it seems to me a logical thing to pursue. But as you say, there's other fish to fry in the short term.
My ears picked up a little bit when you mentioned quite near the start that that Tom Witherspoon had given, what's his name? What's the boy's name?
McGowan
had given him a month.
Four months.
He'd given him 4 months to get rid of his shares.
I don't know if he.
And that's pretty much up now, isn't it?
You know, I think it must be there or thereabouts.
Are we at the edge of a precipice here now?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know if it's Tom Witherspoon put that deadline on him, or whether Colin McGowan had said he would give it 4 months. You know, he felt that he could explore the market, and within 4 months he would know what the situation would be. But that 4 months, I think, is coming towards its end, and I don't know what's going to happen.
You could explore the market in known 4 hours, just exactly what the script was with this.
My big bugbear coming out of this was, It's back to these two camps within the club, and whether they're speaking or not, I don't know. But at the start of the season, for the Ballantines to come out and say, we're really struggling to get through this season, we need your support, please buy season tickets, please put money in whatever we do, I can see why that's the right thing to do, and that's one message. That should match up with a disposal of the club. So if the club's in such a perilous state that it needed money and it needed it quickly, that's almost an insolvent entity which doesn't have much value. If you then get to the point where someone wants £350,000 for a majority share of that, none of us are business owners, but I think you can easily pick holes in that. Mm. And what seems to have happened is any negotiations that there were have fallen down because being asked to justify that figure and provide certain information, they weren't able to do that. And my concern is just, well, are we at an impasse just now? And I know within the meeting there were people saying, well, we should boycott. That's something we maybe never would want to do, but how do you force the issue here? How do you get it to a stage where Tom Witherspoon realises that he has got to ask for a sensible price for his shares, or he's got to, how do we get him to realise what the value is? Because in supporting the club and keeping it going, that maybe just gives him more time to try and negotiate.
I'm sure he knows. I think it's that these early stages, he's probably just wanted to get some of his initial investment back, plus some of the money back that he threw in sort of after Christmas last year. So that's the starter for 10, and the fact that nobody's bitten on that, I would imagine that he's...
He won't be shocked.
He'll not be shocked at that.
I think the market will force issue, you know, and our learned colleague here wrote a fantastic article in the upcoming issue of OTL, which is out of the Albion Rovers game, about Adam Smith from Kirkcaldy and, you know, free market economics. And people will buy, or people will spend what they think something is worth. And I think that's what McGowan's four-month exercise will have determined, that, you know, this is what is realistically going to be achievable in terms of the sale of these shares. And it'll be interesting to see what happens come Christmas time with these and leading into the new year, because we really need to get something settled so that we're not spending another summer wondering, are we going to have a club and who's going to be running that club? It would be nice to have it settled kind of March, you know, February, March time, so that we can...
And that's exactly my concern. So we could get this turned around. Well, it's clear that the status quo can't be what goes on. If it drags into next summer, if it drags on just now, we might get relegated. We just need to wait and see what happens there. If it drags on into next summer, then it's just... Next season could be gone as well, and these attendances, which are dwindling, it's not going to help. So it feels like it needs a clean break. And just, is there any way that the supporters can force that issue? Which I think is where, when people are saying it's broken and it's fixed, just boycott it. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you might end up in an administration that you don't come out of. So,
well, you could say that the level of crowds that we've got now, there is an informal boycott going on. A lot of people, my brother included, the sponsor of this podcast, my brother hasn't been at, I think he's been at one game this season because he's just disgusted by the way that the club's been run. And so you could say that there is a boycott already, and if another couple of hundred was shaved off the home attendance through an official boycott, how much notice would that, would Ballantyne take of that, or Witherspoon take of that? Would it really change their mind? I think what's going to change their mind is when they realise that the prospect is to take a hugely reduced sum of money for the shares, or let the club go into administration or liquidation, and that's the choice that they'll need to make.
The other thing that kind of semi-confused me, I mean, I'm quite easily confused these days, at the meeting, was on the one hand, you'd said that that Jim Ballantyne was fed up and kind of wanted away and I didn't have the enthusiasm for it anymore. But on the other hand, there was a proviso that if somebody came in and took over the club, that Jim would be on the board at some point. How does that kind of follow?
No, I mean,
did I misunderstand that?
What Colin McGowan said was that he felt that Jim and Anne-Marie were pivotal to the running of the club, and there's nobody else that brings the experience or the understanding of how a football club is run So
I find that hard to believe. I think, you know, a couple of mornings sitting down with a couple of folders would tell you what needs to be filed when, where, and whatever.
I saw a Groupon course, 80% off how to run a Scottish football club.
Absolutely.
You know, online course. I think it's £25. No, I mean seriously. I'd be the first to say publicly that I've got great admiration for what the Ballantines have done over the last 3 or 4 months. Maybe not the way that Jim's behaved sometimes, because he's been frustrated and he's lashed out at people. But since Wotherspoon, walked away, they've been the guys that have turned this club from being insolvent into something that is still functioning. Now, it might be dysfunctional, but it's still here. And we have to admire that. We have to recognise that. And I said that at the meeting as well. I think the Ballantyne family would like to walk away. I think they've had it for 15 years now, and they're tired and weary. And I hope that they can walk away with their heads held high and leave a legacy that gives it, you know, retains a club that we can build in the future. So. But the whole thing's a tangled mess at the minute.
The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home.
Last month's most popular item was a song for Airdrie. Now, Danny and Alan's erudite musings on Airdrie's situation got an average of about 1,500 viewers. Singing a silly song got us 6,000.
It's dumbing down.
So I know that you guys felt lost out. I've written you a part for
felt
this.
Very uncomfortable.
Well, this month you've got a part so that you can be involved. So I don't want you to miss out on the limelight. This was Steph McGuffin, sent this in as a suggestion for a song, and I've kind of I've changed the lyrics of it slightly. This is like a Lennon McCartney Telford McGuffin working on this together. And Jack, guys, I think you know your parts, so we might just jump straight.
No, we don't
to
know
it.
Our parts at all.
Your part is, well, I've told you things. Pause. Yeah, it's,
well, just tell us on the air, don't pause.
No, because I'll ruin the surprise. Apologies again for the lack of vocal ability. This is
let's
maybe
just wing it.
To give you a clue, it's maybe a bit more Deirdre than Gary, but well, let's see how it plays out. He says he's not good time.
He needs to give up.
And we've had no success to speak of, not even had a run in the Challenge Cup. They say we've no chance of promotion, we've got no manager or team. It's all just turned into a nightmare from a dream.
Bridge.
Whatever he said, whatever he did, isn't working. So come on, do just what you should.
I want it back.
You know it's gone wrong, but give it to us and we'll sort it. Give us it back, Tom Wotherspoon.
We want it back, Tom Wotherspoon.
Unprepared. And ill advised.
That's us.
Just going.
It's all his story. It sounded good.
Well.
But in barely 2 years' time, you damn near killed the Airdrie.
Don't
know what might be.
Deed.
It's like a painful separation. If you would give it up for free, what does McGowan? Was a 350 grand fee. Whatever he said, whatever he did, it hasn't worked out. So Tom, just do just what you should.
We want it back, Tom Wotherspoon.
It's gone wrong, but give it to us and we'll sort it. Give us it back, Tom Wotherspoon.
Tom Wotherspoon.
We know
Now it's time for you
to give it up.
What's good?
That was lovely. That was lovely.
That'll be the best song today, that's a guarantee.
The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home.
Yeah, so a big announcement of our sponsor, Danny, that's your brother, so that's he's shown a real leap of faith in us. If we could ask everyone to repay that, and if we can commercialise this at all, the money which Grant has given us is going to go to the trust, and any other sponsorship which we get will likewise just be passed straight to the trust. To help with that, if we could ask you to subscribe to however you listen to the podcast, so if that's on SoundCloud, if it's on iTunes, if you can subscribe and give us reviews, like the page on Facebook, then that helps us to show the number of people who watch and listen, and will help hopefully to bring some money in which will go onto the trust to help with their causes.
The OTL podcast is sponsored by Alba Property and Landscaping.
Alba Property Landscapers.
Make your house a home.